Jason, the Bears have won four in a row after beating the Saints 26-14. We'll break it all down coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears just beat a really bad Saints team by 12. Why doesn't it feel like everybody's just thrilled about that?
Well, it's good for them that they won. And if you think back last year, Pat, in November, they lost a game a lot like this to New England. So it could be worse. It also could be a lot better. And when you're playing a team like the Saints, that anybody that looks at them can see talent-wise, salary cap-wise, this is a team that is multiple years away from being competitive. You've got them coming home to Soldier Field. You should put away teams like this. New Orleans made it a six-point game in the third quarter. The Bears kind of missed their chance to run away with this. And offensively, Ben Johnson said this in his post-game Sunday. When you get four takeaways, they got three interceptions and a strip sack, you should be coming away with more points than this. You should be coming away with more than 26 points. 2 for 6 in the red zone, scoring touchdowns, not very good. A lot of pre-snap penalties and other issues, kind of just general sloppiness, not good. And the passing game was terrible on Sunday. Caleb Williams would be the first one to tell you that. He did not play well at all. They got carried by that defense and by the ground game. There's a lot here that needs to look better. And the way that I look at every one of these games is there's the immediate, which is whatever it takes.
Right.
If you win a game on a blocked field goal in Las Vegas, and or if you win a game when your quarterback has a 60 passer rating like they did against New Orleans, good for you if you find a way to do that. If you however you survive on a Sunday, no apologies. But then there's the long-term view. What does this tell you about where they're headed? And for me, it's not a big swing either way, but this tilts more toward discouraging than encouraging for me.
Yeah, you mentioned it after the game. You don't feel any better about the Bears today than you did yesterday.
Well, if you look at, like, you and I were talking off mic before this about them playing Baltimore next. That's not a game either of us really felt confident in the Bears going to Baltimore and winning. And I don't care that Baltimore's 2-4 or whatever. That's
1-5.
Either way, like, that's a tough game for the Bears nonetheless. I feel worse about it after the Saints game than I did before.
It's funny you brought up the Patriots game. You know, Jason, that was the last time the Bears were favored to win a game. It was also the last time the Bears had a better record than their opponent.
Yeah, last November.
Which is...
And they lost 19-3.
Yeah, 49 weeks ago, something like that. So it could be worse. Like you said, they could lose the game and fire their offensive coordinator 36 hours later, right, which is what happened last year. So the Bears aren't going to apologize for the outcome here, but you're right. It just wasn't particularly sharp. Caleb Williams was the beneficiary, like you said, of a good run game, but really of a good defense. And they were up 20-0 in the first half, Jason. And do you know how they got there? They got there because their average starting possession was at the 46 of the Saints going in. I mean, the reason that Jake Moody has, you know, 8 field goals in 2 weeks is because his offense hasn't been as efficient as it needs to be. But when you've got half a field, You're putting up points by getting a first down or two.
Yeah, you're starting a first down away from field goal range.
Right, and that's exactly what happened with the Bears today. And you know, you mentioned it got a little dicey. You know, in the third quarter, the Saints had scored 14 in a row, and all of a sudden the Bears are marching down the field. They're one punt away from this really being a ball game. They go all the way down to the one. It's fourth and goal at the one, Jason. They decide to go for it. Which I think I questioned in the moment, but they put Caleb Williams under center, and what happens?
Oh, the Drew Dahman double clutch?
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple Drew Dahman issues on that one. Drew Dahman double clutched the snap, and they fumbled it. And in a way, it kind of worked out, far from being a worst-case scenario, because the double clutch of the snap is a false start, so... while it was a failed play, there was technically a penalty before the snap that bailed them out of that, and they were able to still kick.
Yeah, Caleb Williams put the ball on the ground. The exchange wasn't clean. As it turned out, the play didn't count because of the false start. The Bears kick a field goal. They go up 9. They add a field goal in the fourth quarter to win by 12. But I think that was Caleb's day in a nutshell, which is maybe the best play of the game was a penalty that kind of prevented Caleb from getting in his own way.
Yeah, Caleb in general has just been a little off. And the thing that he has brought up twice now is his throwing on the run. And he seems, from what I'm, you know, reading the nonverbal cues of when he's talking about this, he seems to think that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Because that's been his thing. Mm-hmm. If you look up USC highlights or even rookie year highlights of Caleb Williams, you're going to see a guy who is making plays on the run. What Ben Johnson is frustrated about in that is he sees that as, I don't know exactly how he'd phrase it, but I'm going to call it like hidden yardage within the game. When you have a play that breaks down and is extended, a lot of people think, oh, that's the time for a big play. And maybe it is. But a lot of times that is an easy opportunity to find someone underneath who's been forgotten about. And as long as you can identify that and deliver a sharp ball, you're going to pick up little yards doing that that are going to add up. And Caleb Williams has really been off on that. The throwing accuracy in general is still a problem. It's been a problem his entire Bears career, which is now 23 starts. And that wasn't his issue in college. That's got to get better.
He's 15 for 26 for 172 yards. He was sacked once on a third down and had a pass rating of 61.7. Jason, he also threw a first half interception. What I thought was interesting, though, was, you know, when Caleb details his problems with throwing on the run, you know, you would think that that is, well, maybe he keeps it when he shouldn't and he throws it when he shouldn't. But his rushing yards today, he had 4 carries for negative 2 yards. It's like he wasn't doing either thing right. And you know, you mentioned it, that he brought it up Wednesday and he brought it up again on Sunday, that it's just the thing that he knows he needs to get better at. What's so bizarre is, like, if he has a superpower, that's what it is throwing on the run and throwing decisively on the run. My God, Jason, if you look at Bears receivers today, their leading receiver in terms of yards was DJ Moore, who had 43 yards. Nobody else, or Roma Dunze had 31. Nobody else had more than 25.
Part of the stat sheet looks a lot like something I've seen before, where when Justin Fields' numbers are depressed like that, or when rookie year Caleb Williams' numbers are depressed like that, you know, who's going to have a good game receiving-wise after when the quarterback's playing like that?
Yeah, the answer is nobody. Of course, DeAndre Swift bails them out, goes 19 carries for 124. Kyle Manungai, Jason, my guy, 13 for 81. Just a tremendous rushing day for the Bears, who finished with 222 yards, 5.6 yards a pop. That'll win a lot of football games, even when your quarterback's playing poorly.
DeAndre Swift showed up to the post-game press conference in a fitted San Diego Padres hat that I know you were...
He's my new favorite player.
Yep. Very happy to see. I'm going to apply my same short-term, long-term dynamic to DeAndre Swift. Short-term, this was great. Long-term, there's a lot here that I think will continue against anybody, against any defense. The thing I really like when I'm watching DeAndre Swift, big game against Washington, big game against the Saints, he is running the way that they've said they want him running. Even on his big runs, DeAndre Swift is hitting the hole immediately. There is a hole, for one, mm-hmm. which wasn't always the case in 2024. But for two, that's where he's going.
Yep.
He had a run today, I think 15, 20 yards or something, and it was a between-the-tackles run. And that is the kind of... probability that Ben Johnson wants to play. Ben Johnson's a big math guy. That's the math he wants to play, is you hit the hole, you get us 2 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards, 1 yard, whatever, but you keep hitting that hole, and with his speed, it just takes one thing to break down or for him to make a great move after he hits that hole, and that can be a 20-yard gain.
He has been very different in the last 6 days than he was at the start of the year, and even than he was last season, when he was, I think, statistically the most inefficient running back in the NFL in the last 5 years.
Well, that's your opinion, and that's the coaching staff's opinion, and that's my opinion, and everyone else's, and it's the statistics' opinion, Patrick. But that is not the opinion of DeAndre Swift.
No, it's funny. In the offseason, we go, so what are they teaching you different? And he goes, nothing. And you go, oh.
And the same old DeAndre Swift.
I hope it's something. And, you know, that has just really been a really nice change. You know, it's something that you can bank on when the weather gets cold. It's something you can bank on home and away. You know, those run games travel. And Caleb Williams is going to have more games, maybe not this bad, but he's a young quarterback. You can't expect him to be good every time out. And to even give yourself a fighting chance when your quarterback's got a passer rating in the 60s, I think speaks pretty well to them. Jason, the defense had 4 takeaways. three interceptions and a fumble recovery. They were, I mean, they should have had maybe two more. Like, they were pretty dominant all day. Is that a reflection of Spencer Rattler being horrible at football, or the defense being good? By the way, don't look at Spencer Rattler's passer rating, because it will lie to you all day and twice on Sundays.
I think Spencer Rattler had thrown for like 5 yards going into the end of the first half.
Their first 19 offensive plays, Jason, produced 4 yards.
And then they kind of caught a little fire there late in the second quarter, and then flipping it around coming out of halftime and got touchdowns on both of those drives, made it a game from 20-0 to 20-14. I think the Saints are a really, really, really bad team, especially on offense. I don't know what their plan is at quarterback, because they just drafted somebody, but he's not playing. Spencer Rattler's not really that good, but he is playing. There's a lot. It's a very weak opponent. Now, granted, that defense has done this to better opponents. Washington and the Raiders, you know, the Raiders aren't amazing,
right,
but they're better than this, than the Saints. I still worry about against anybody but this absolute bottom tier of the NFL. And this, again, the Saints might be the worst team in the NFL. I would bet that they'll be the worst team in the NFL. I don't know how they won a game this year.
The Jets exist, Jason.
Let's see. But now you made me lose track of what I was saying. Oh, the defense. The play-to-play consistency of the defense is still really in question. And you're going to get a lot of turnovers, takeaways, when you're playing bad quarterbacks and when you're playing in bad weather. But I can't count on this defense getting those takeaways when they're playing Detroit and Green Bay.
No.
So then you're counting on the play-to-play. Can they stop the run? Mostly the answer's been no. Can they stop the pass? Well, Jalen Johnson's out for probably the season, and Tyreek Stevenson is hurt too.
Hurt his shoulder today. Left after getting hurt in the second quarter. Cole Kmet, the tight end, hurt his back in the third quarter. But yeah, I mean, you're right. But isn't this kind of who they are? I mean, they're going to get beat by the great teams. They can make the bad teams look really stupid. Like, if the Bears are now firmly in the middle class.
Defensively, you mean?
I mean, just in general. I mean, the Bears kind of being a firm member of the NFL's middle class, that would be a tremendous upgrade from what we've seen for the last 6 years.
It's right? Progress. You establish some minimum standards, and man, the Bears, there have not been minimum standards at Hallis Hall during my time covering them. I mean, it's kind of been anything passes as acceptable for the most part until they finally just lose it and fire somebody. I mean, again, losing last year to New England is a good counterexample to what happened today, where even though they played poorly, they didn't get embarrassed like that.
No.
They didn't allow that. They are not going to lose to teams like that. So that is progress. We'll see if they can continue that, because there's a couple more of these types of teams coming up. Cincinnati might be one of those teams when they go there in a couple weeks without Joe Burrow, and certainly the Giants after that are one of those teams.
Yeah, road games are hard, and I think we'll all have to remind ourselves of that, even when they play average teams. Jason, in a previous life, I covered Rich Rodriguez, the old college football coach.
You familiar? Arizona?
In Arizona. And he used to say, first you lose by a lot, then you lose by a little, then you win by a little, then you win by a lot. I think the Bears right now have crossed over from the lose by a little category to the win by a little category. And that's something, isn't it?
There's a baseline. I mean, there's at least a floor to what this team is going to be. But specifically with the defense, the conversation we're having about them getting these takeaways and that offsetting some other issues, if you look at their stats against the run and their stats in terms of total yardage, I mean, that'd be like if you had an offense that was constantly finding itself in 3rd and 15.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, like multiple times a game, it was finding a way to bail out of that with a 40-yard pass or something.
Sure.
You wonder how long they can keep that up. It's great in the moment, for sure, but is that something that you can sustain?
It's a good question. I'll tell you, the one takeaway that I felt the best about was Montez Sweat getting a strip sack in the first quarter. The best way, or the fastest way for the Bears pass rush to get to where it needs to be, is for Montez Sweat to be better. And this was maybe the first really big flash play. He was part of the fumble in Washington on Monday night, where, if you believe the official score, about 14 different people touched the football. But, you know, that's 2 weeks in a row that he has made an impact. And that's two more games than we could have said in the first part of the season.
Montez Sweat gave you a game Sunday that you would take every week. A sack, a forced fumble, a second tackle for loss. I think he had four tackles overall. Like, that's fine.
Yes.
Montez Sweat gives you that every week. That, like you're saying, is kind of the base layer of your defense. That would be great. And then you see what else you get beyond that on a really good day.
With the pass game, Jason, is there a cause for concern in your mind that Roma Dunze, had two drops today, or, two really, really close, one ball that I think he should have had and another that was close to it. And if he's the number one receiver that the Bears say he is, does he need to do more than this?
I'm not going to kill him for that in a season where he's been phenomenal.
Right.
And he has been, he clearer than Caleb Williams is living up to the trajectory that you would have sketched out for him to hit. It's not a great game, but that's not reflective of what his season's been to me.
How important is this week going forward? Like we said, on paper, the Ravens are the most disappointing team in football, mm-hmm. but they also have maybe the best quarterback the Bears will face all year. They have a defense that has been terrible this season, but that has the horses to shut the Bears down. This is not the Saints. This is not the Raiders. You could argue that even though they have a terrible record, this might be the best team the Bears have faced, not named the Lions, all season.
It's a tough road game regardless, as you said earlier, but also I'm not counting them as we spent all week listening to the Bears talk about how the Saints are not as bad as their record. No, they are definitely as bad as their record. The Ravens are not as bad as their record. And when the Ravens say that they're going to fix this and turn this around, I believe them.
Because they've done it in the past.
Because they have credibility. It's a lot different than when you've heard it around here for the last few years, because you're hearing it from people who have done it.
Yeah.
And by the time the Bears show up in Baltimore for that game, Lamar Jackson is expected to be back and healthy. Roquan Smith, remember him?
Yep.
He's expected to be back and healthy. And I think I couldn't see them winning that game. But we want to say, what is a reasonable standard here? Don't get embarrassed against anybody. Don't have 52-21. Is that the score to the Lions game in week two, I think?
Yeah.
Don't have that against anybody. That's totally unacceptable. That's not what any solid team has happened to them, even against good teams. Solid teams go into a game against somebody like the Lions or the Ravens or the Packers and give them a scare.
Right.
That's what you got to do if you're the Bears going into this one.
The locker room today wasn't happy. And, I don't think they take wins for granted, nor should they. You and I have been doing this long enough and we know how hard it is to win in the league. But it seems like there's a general feeling that they didn't live up to the standard today, win or lose. I think that's a good sign, don't you?
I think this comes back to Ben Johnson being someone who is insistent on objectivity mm-hmm. about himself as well. And he, again, took responsibility for something Sunday toward the end of the first half, saying that that was partly on him that they left the Saints that time to get a touchdown going into halftime. I think that Ben Johnson is relentless in giving a clear assessment of the performance regardless of the result. And one of the things he said after the game Sunday was that when you win, you can coach a lot harder mm-hmm. during the week. You can coach them a lot harder about the things that weren't done right when you're sitting there with a win in your pocket. Caleb Williams, by the way, said that it is, quote, insane that they are 4-2 right now, given how much better they could play than what they've been doing.
I think that's fair offensively. I think defensively, I think you'd have to be pretty greedy to ask for the defense to play, to have any more good fortune than it already has when it comes to takeaways. But from an offensive point of view, I completely agree. Look at the penalties they have, Jason. Like, coming into this game, I think they were the third or fourth most penalized team in football, depending on whether you looked at yards or the sheer number of flags. And then what? They had another 10 today? They're
10 penalties today, all of them accepted.
I don't know whether they're a bad team, but they've got some habits of a bad team, including, four false starts?
Five.
Five false starts at home, Jason? Are you kidding me?
Five false starts, two by Theo Benedet, one by Drew Dahlman, one by Cole Kmet, one by Colston Loveland, and there should have been another one on Drew Dahlman. The Drew Dahlman play, the what looked like in real time a fumbled snap in the first quarter. I believe it was at the Saints' 6-yard line, mm-hmm. right after that strip sack. That was ruled officially as a fumbled snap, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
There was no fumble. That was really a false start. Drew Dahlman said that he started to snap the ball early. He was not on the right cadence, which is exactly the sloppiness that Ben Johnson has been harping on. Pat and I are sitting in the 300 level of Soldier Field right now, looking out over the 50-yard line right now, and I can picture while I'm watching this Family Fest back in August when the same stuff was happening.
Right.
And Ben Johnson afterwards saying, we're going to just lose games constantly if we don't stop this. And 10 penalties, 5 of them should have been 6, really, false starts. That will sink you against good opponents. You get away with that against the Saints or the Raiders or whoever, but that is usually going to sink you against good opponents. Drew Dahlman was off on the cadence, as he said, and started to snap the ball early down there and instinctively tried to correct that once he realized he was off by pulling it back. And then by the time he pulled it back, there was nothing to do but just fall to the ground so you don't lose it. So there actually was never a fumble. There was never a snap.
Right.
That should have been the 6th false start.
About 2 or 3 weeks ago, Ben started talking about playing our best football in December. Do you remember this? It was a different a change in messaging. And it might have been after the first win, where he just said kind of out of the blue, well, we're going to be playing our best ball in December and January. By the way, January, a very presumptuous month. There's a game scheduled. And I think that if Bears fans can feel good about something, it's that the Bears have a chance between now and when they play those good teams to actually fix this stuff. And had their schedule broken differently, these sorts of false starts would come against good teams and they'd have losses to show for it. I don't think they have one quite yet. I think the only mistake you can really tie to a loss might be maybe kind of sort of Cairo Santos kicking a ball into the end zone when he shouldn't have in week one. Otherwise, you know, when they've won, or I'm sorry, when they've lost, it's been, you know, a pretty thorough effort. I think if they can get this stuff fixed, they'll have a far better chance to be competitive, in that December and January.
It does set up well for them, it turns out. I remember going into last year and saying I love the way their schedule sets up for them ahead of time. I didn't really feel that way. And then I ended up being wrong, by the way. We all ended up being wrong because they couldn't beat hardly anybody. I didn't really feel that way going into this schedule, Pat. I just thought it's kind of whatever. There isn't really, it doesn't lean for or against them. It has turned out to be favorable to them right now, I think, because partly of their own doing. They were able to get to 4-2, or 3-2 rather, and now they had this stretch of 4 games against teams that are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore is not a bad team yet. I'm not calling them a bad team yet, but they are struggling. So it is a nice lull in the schedule where your record is still pretty good, 4-2 now with the win over the Saints, and you have 3 games left here to kind of get right before you start to get into Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Philly, Green Bay.
Yeah, and anybody in your division is going to be pretty good, judging by what the NFC North has done.
The Bears went in today in last place at 3-2.
Might they still be in last place at 4-2?
No, the Vikings lost. They're ahead of the Vikings, huh?
That'll be a fun December. Whether they're playing their best football or not, it'll at least be relevant football. Let's put it that way. And that's all we ever ask
You'd
for.
Love to see the Bears, just from a viewing standpoint, just from an entertainment perspective, you'd love to see the Bears something like 6-3 with some momentum going into the final couple months of the season against a bunch of good teams. That's something that you should cancel your Sunday to watch.
I think it'd be interesting if the Bears are in a decent position going into Black Friday, which would be the 1-year anniversary of them deciding to fire everybody. That would make the rest of the season a lot more fun than it was in 2024. Jason, that'll do it from here. We will be back later in the week to help preview Lamar Jackson and Roquan and Derrick Henry, by the way. Derrick Henry.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to him. He may have a big day next week. But until then, the Bears are 4-2, and that's worth enjoying for a couple of days. He is Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.